Good afternoon, everyone. We have a workshop on our fiscal year 14-15 budget. Present today is City Manager Matthew Brower, Councilman Hilty, Councilman Moller, myself, John McLeod, Councilman Musley, and Ms. Rich is on her way. Mr. Brower, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Great. Thank you, Council President. We appreciate the opportunity to commence our work meetings for the development of the fiscal year 2014-2015 annual budget. Tonight is the fifth, I believe, of five work meetings that we've proposed to work through our budget. I'm going to entail the assistance of Diane Reichert and Cindy Kelly in this presentation. And if there's no questions, we're going to go ahead and begin up without any further ado.
Good evening. The objective of today's workshop is just to get council's direction on what we need to do for the 2014-2015 budget, and all things in the budget are keeping in mind the strategic plan and what our goals are going forward. This is just a reminder of the council work sessions that are scheduled. For the benefit of the newer council members, we have a very large budget, so we break it up into segments. So tonight's workshop is just on the format, meaning it's basically the plan that we are going to use to balance the budget and any policy considerations we need to address. Our second workshop is on our capital replacement and renewal program. The third workshop will be the general fund and the ancillary funds, like special revenue funds like the gas tax fund and funds like that. Then we will roll into our enterprise fund workshops, and we will look at all of those on that day. And then in August, we will wrap up with the entire budget in one package. And in September are the two public hearings that we are required to hold via Florida statute. The first hearing is the tentative adoption, and the second hearing is the final adoption of the budget. We will have separate documents for each workshop. This first workshop is just the PowerPoint presentation and the two policy draft documents that you received. Each workshop after this will actually have a workbook where you'll start to see some of the numbers coming together for the budget. Everyone participated in the process. I could not have gotten this far without the assistance of the directors, the fiscal managers, the department heads, and everyone citywide involved in, you know, bringing it together. And again, we've tied everything to the strategic plan.
So let me take just a moment and talk about the strategic plan for just a moment. As my staff knows, there are four goals, right? They are economic hub, and these are your goals. Council leads and staff follows. There are four goals. Economic hub is goal one. This is our foundational goal. The second goal is fiscal sustainability. We feel for good at achieving goal one, which is economic hub. We'll be, of course, able to achieve goal number two, which is fiscal sustainability. Goal three is operational excellence. If we're able to achieve goal two, we believe we can achieve goal three. And of course, goal four is quality of place, and we can do a better job at achieving goal four if we're successful at achieving goal number three. And of course, it's like a flywheel. Each time you push on that flywheel, it gets more momentum and keep getting more and more successful. We have identified a number of metrics for each goal, as you can see to the right there. I'm not going to spend much time going through those, but I'm going to have attached to this Friday's Inside Ocala a copy of our metrics for each of those goals, and you will see what the update is as of the end of May. Next, please. So during the strategic retreat that council had back in January, you gave us some marching orders with regards to the budget development for fiscal year 2014-2015. The first marching order, if you recall, was no tax increase. So you'll notice that we are not proposing any tax increase for balancing the general fund. That is not one of our strategies for doing that. The next marching order you gave us was stable utility rates. You also know that we are not advocating any rate increases at any of our enterprise funds. The third marching order is no reduction in workforce. We are not to include any type of RIFT or attrition program to reduce the workforce. As you know, we talked a great deal about trying to maintain our current level of service, difficult to do as we continue to reduce the size of our workforce. The fourth marching order was considered delaying capital projects, and we have used that a little bit in trying to get a balanced budget. And the last marching order you gave us in terms of this year's budget was to consider employee compensation scenarios, and we have done that, and we'll look at reporting out to a little bit tonight, but more so when we talk about the general fund in a couple of weeks. So this next page is talking about your top policy priorities coming out of strategic retreat. I'm not going to spend a lot of time going over these because I've updated the memo that provides an update on each of these. And so if you'll take one and pass it around, at your leisure, you can review that and see how staff is at pursuing the high policy priorities that council outlined in your January retreat. Next, please.
Hey, Ms. Rich.
And Ms. Rich has joined us. Thank you, Ms. Rich.
You're welcome.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Okay, every year the budget office, in conjunction with the departments, takes a look at our key management practices, and we look at updating them each time during the budget process to ensure that they are still guiding us in the right direction. Additionally, this year we are looking at a few new parameters, a fund balance policy for the enterprise funds. Basically, that is something that would mirror what we do for the general fund, where we have a 20% reserve requirement. And the enterprise transfer policy, that will speak to the amount of general fund support that each enterprise fund can handle on an annual basis. And then a not-for-profit funding policy. Just kind of recalling how we got here, this is one of the longest recovery periods on record as far as recessions go. We've had ongoing fiscal challenges throughout the city. We've had multi-million dollar deficits for several years, and we've worked diligently to close that gap, and things are starting to look up. And we're going to look at just a few of the strategies we used in the past to close the gap and what we will do going forward. For the current fiscal year budget, when we adopted at this time last year, we were undertaking pension reform for the general employees. So that has taken place, and we are in the first year of our new redesigned pension plan, our burial benefit defined hybrid plan, and our defined contribution plan for all new hires and those existing employees that elected to transfer over. We did a debt refinancing last summer, which saved money for the city. We looked at our interfund transfers, and we did utilize some excess reserves in the current year to balance the general fund. Rolling into the process for the 2014-2015 budget, the departments were given the request to do a zero-based budgeting methodology. So basically, our request was to say, if you were opening your shop today, what would you need to open your shop and provide a certain level of service? So we were not looking for them to just take what they had now and just, you know, tack 3% on or tack something onto it. We were wanting them to kind of dismantle the ship and put it back together and let us know what they needed. We continue with pension reform. As council is aware, we are presently bargaining with all three of our unions, and pension reform will be part of the bargaining for the police and the fire. We are doing another debt refinancing that will be coming to council at the next council meeting, in fact, where we will be able to save some money for the city related to our utility bonds. We are looking at the interfund transfers again, and at the present time, we have program transfers for the enterprises at the 6% level, which is a reduction from where we are presently. We are looking at a one-time use of excess fund balance in some of our funds. We are reviewing the fiscal policies, as we spoke about earlier, and we are also looking at our cost allocation methodology. And basically what this is looking at our indirect costs to the enterprises to ensure that we are actually charging them for the services used versus using flat transfers of large dollar amounts. That way they're paying in appropriately for the services.
And that's critical, because if there's no allocation for cost, there's no value to it for employees. And so by doing this allocation methodology, they're going to see that posted to their department or their budget. It don't have value because it's going to impact that bottom line.
The items that we're going to discuss today, at a very high level, we're going to go over the trim process. We're going to look at fees and tax structure for the city. We're going to talk a little bit about our revenue projections. We're going to talk about the CRA process, a quick overview of our CIP, and then what the general fund deficit currently looks like and what our options are for employee recognition. trim or the truth in millage, this is how council sets the property tax rate. So there's, when you levy the property tax rate, it's a dollar per thousand of value. You've got some of your homestead exemptions, your, you know, first 50,000. If you're a widower or blind, there's lots of different exemptions to that. When council sets that rate, we have a few options. On June 1st, the property appraiser gives us what's called a preliminary estimate. So they give us a basic, what they expect the value of the city to be for the ensuing fiscal year. On July 1st, the property appraiser will actually certify the roll to the city saying, this is your value. We have some forms that are called DR-420s. And then we will, at that point, be able to calculate what the millage rate can be for the city. The rollback rate, or the revenue neutral rate, as we have called it in the past, is the rate at which the city will bring in the same amount of revenue in the ensuing fiscal year as it did in the prior fiscal year. The dichotomy we've had over the past few years with a declining property tax base is the rollback rate had been a roll forward rate. So it's basically an algebraic equation. The value of the property goes down, the value of the mill must go up to generate the same amount of revenue. Thankfully, this year we had an increase for the first time in property values in a long time. So we had about a 2.7% increase in values. We were very excited to see that things are starting to turn around.
Recall though, we have a 25% hole we've got to make up.
Yes.
So 2.7% is good, but we've got to make up 25% loss.
And so we are still don't have a millage rate effective, so we have an estimated value at the present time. As far as setting the millage rates, when council adopts a tentative millage rate, which you will do at your second city council meeting in the month of July, when the property appraiser certifies the roll on the first, we do the calculations to see what the millage rate options are for the city. We send that information back to the property appraiser, and council will adopt a tentative millage. It's important for council to understand that when you adopt a tentative millage, that is your ceiling. So whatever rate you adopt at your tentative millage time, that is the maximum tax rate that you could levy during that fiscal year. You are allowed to come down from that rate at any time before adoption, but you cannot go up. So for example, if council decided they were going to adopt the rollback rate, and then later in the process realized that you had a shortage and you needed to generate more revenue, you would be unable to do that. But you can set a higher millage, and then as you balance your budget process, bring the millage down to come in line with where you want to be. There are also some considerations with setting your millage that came about by the property tax legislation in 2008. Amendment 1 is what it was called. There are some parameters set in place called a maximum millage. Statutorily, the maximum millage you can levy is 10 mils. However, under this statute, you have some additional voting requirements to levy certain millage rates. So the maximum millage rate that can be levied by a majority vote of the council is your rollback rate. So if you would like to go above the rollback rate in any fashion, you'd need to have a two-thirds vote. And if you want to go above even a certain rate, then you need to have a unanimous vote or a referendum. And as we get closer and have those figures, we bring that at the general fund workshop, what your rate options are and what vote it would take to levy those. This is the current value of a mill. The preliminary estimate from the property appraiser gave us a 3.6 as our mill value versus 3.5 last year. So we are excited to see that we're moving back in the right direction. And as Matt indicated, we actually had a 25% drop in property value, so we still have a little bit of ways to go. Looking at the fee and tax structure for the city, as Matt indicated, we presently don't have any tax increases programmed in the budget. The departments do update their fee schedules annually, so we have a few departments where some of the fees will be changed, and those fees are commensurate with the cost of providing that service. The fire fee will remain at the same level, and the utilities at the present time are undergoing a rate study, and that rate study will be forthcoming, and there'll be a council workshop on the rate study. So at this time, we don't have any rate changes in utilities. Looking at our revenue and growth projections, the communication services tax, or the CST, has been a subject of consideration at the legislature for several years in a row. They are looking to eliminate the communications services tax. So that is an item of concern for the city for a couple of reasons. One, it is one of our pledged revenues for our bond debt. So it's important to us to not see that go away. Secondarily, it's one of the larger revenue sources after property tax for the general fund. It's about, you know, $3.5 million to the general fund. There had been talk of replacing it with some different structure, but now there's talk of eliminating it entirely. So this is something that we will be watching as the new legislative session opens next year. So it will not affect the 15 budget, but it would affect the 16 budget should they eliminate it. Gas tax, we are in the second year of our step down from the gas tax. If council will recall, last year we had a new interlocal agreement signed with the county where the 9 cent gas tax was eliminated, which was $500,000 for the city, and the two local option taxes were reduced. And it was a 3-year step down plan, so we are in year 2 of that step down plan. As I said earlier, the enterprise fund transfers are currently set at the 6% level. And we do have some modest increases in our building permit area. We're starting to see more permits being pulled and revenue is coming in ahead of schedule. The CRA is another area we would need to visit this year. The council currently has the existing CRA, and we have 4 new CRAs that are in the works. With the CRA, we have the trust fund where the dollars are deposited. The Auditor General's office has been auditing CRAs specifically. This came from the governor's office because it is a special taxing district, and all the special taxing districts are being looked at to see if the money is being used properly, if they should sunset some of them, or there's lots of considerations. So we wanted to take the time to review how the process of a CRA should work to ensure that we're doing everything that we need to do. And there are a few things that we are not doing on a regular basis. So council will see some procedural changes from staff, things that we need to do to make sure that we're in compliance. And basically, as we do presently, like with our audit committee, where we have a quarterly meeting, the CRA board, which is council, will have a quarterly meeting where we will have minutes, you know, notice the meetings and everything on a quarterly schedule. We already have a separate redevelopment plan. Our projects are separate versus our city comp plan, and they are because we maintain them in a separate trust fund. We have it broken out in our CAFR. That is something we did 2 years ago as part of the legislation. So our CRA does show as a major fund in our CAFR and a component of the city, and it is a separate legal entity. So council, what that will mean for you is when we adopt a budget or we have a budget resolution that affects the CRA, we will call for the council to convene as the CRA board, review the budget resolution or review the project or whatever it is, give your recommendation, close the CRA meeting, open the city council meeting, and then the city council will adopt the resolution the normal way. That way we can demonstrate that, you know, that we're in compliance. So just a small procedural change for council. Some of the operating processes, which we already have in place, we do adopt a CRA budget on an annual basis. We will have a separate budget hearing. If council recall, we have the district ABC hearing first and then the regular budget hearing. We'll now add to that a CRA budget hearing, the special district hearing, and then the city budget hearing. So again, it's more procedural in nature. And it seems kind of redundant because the city council is also the CRA board. But in entities where the CRA board is not the city council, you could see why it would make more sense. Budgets for special districts are contained within the overall budget, so we don't need to maintain, you know, a separate set of books. The part that the Auditor General's office has had an issue with is the section 163.387 on the bottom in blue. It is what is done with CRA dollars if they are not spent. The statute provides for one of three things to happen with those CRA dollars. They are at the end of a fiscal year, not at the end of the life of the CRA, at the end of each fiscal year. Either they are returned to the taxing authorities, they are used to reduce indebtedness, so if we had outstanding bonds in this CRA, we could use them to pay down those bonds, or we could escrow those funds to make future refundings later. Or we need to appropriate, yes?
The indebtedness would have to be within the CRA?
Yes, correct. Would have to be a CRA issued bond. Or we can appropriate them to a specific redevelopment project within the CRA and expend those funds within 3 years. Presently, we do not have our CRA funds appropriated to a specific project. They are sitting in our reserve while council is deliberating, you know, which projects we're going to do, and there's several on the table as it relates to the CRA. So at the present time, we would be considered out of compliance with the statutes as it relates to the CRA. So our objective would be to appropriate those funds during the 15 budget process to a specific project and get those funds spent out.
And let me ask you this, just as an example. Would it, for instance, a parking garage, you could appropriate a certain amount of that, would that be considered in compliance?
Yes. Okay. We would have to appropriate it, and then within 3 years we need to build, have spent it on that project.
Okay, so you have to not only just appropriate, but you have to spend it for 3 years. Okay.
That's correct. And so that is a new operating process for the city that we haven't done in the past. The CRA fund balance has been accumulating over a number of years, so we are definitely outside of compliance when it comes to this.
But it's got to go back into the CRA.
Yes, it has to be spent within the CRA. We cannot spend it elsewhere outside the boundaries of the CRA, so we got to build something or return the money to the entities that paid. And some of it the city paid, and then the rest comes from the county.
Okay.
Which brings us to our CIP funding plan. We've talked about the bond funds running out. We have very limited bond funds in citywide, with utilities as well as on the general side of the house. Initially, our project requests exceeded our funding availability, so we have gone through several exercises with the departments to reduce their funding requests going forward. The issue still remains with how the city is going to fund its ongoing capital renewal and replacement programs. For example, you know, our buildings, our IT, our fleet, you know, our rolling stock. We have not been funding that plan for a number of years. This will be our sixth year. Last year, what we did is we had the enterprises transfer sufficient dollars to cover their respective purchases so that the fund balance in that fund could be used for the general fund department purchases. And we plan to do that again this year, but from a long-term planning perspective, we need to have a process in place for funding that long-term so that we don't have deterioration of our existing infrastructure. We have several projects that are multi-phase. Presently, we do not have funding available beyond phase one for a majority of those projects. So that is something else that we're looking at this year. The departments do turn in a five-year plan. So we are going to look at with them, what is the funding, how realistic is the funding for that five-year plan? So if I were to roll cash from year to year, you know, do I roll negative in year two, or do I have available funding and revenue streams coming in to fund that plan long term? So that's something that you'll see new that we're looking at this year. And then we, you know, continue to explore options, you know, kind of globally for what we can do to fund projects, because most of our CIP is non-recurring in nature as far as revenue is concerned. This is a little hard to see, but this is where the current general fund deficit is. We're presently at about $5.1 million. We are not complete with the general fund yet. We have a few more tweaks that we need to do general fund, so this may go up a little bit from where we are right now.
Just so council knows, we will present to you alternatives for closing that hole. So you will have a game plan, probably one or two game plans that you'll be able to use to close that hole, and you'll be able to tell staff how you want to do that. So we'll present to you a balanced budget based upon some alternatives for closing the budget hole.
And just so you know what's represented there, we have the ability to transfer $2.5 million from our internal service funds. We audited our internal service funds and looked at the amount of reserve we were holding there. And our internal service funds are basically our insurance funds, workers' comp, you know, life, health, those funds. And due to the fact that the risk management department has been very diligent in closing out claims and really staying on top of that, we have had the ability to reduce the amount of reserves that we need to maintain for claims runoff. So that actually frees up $2.5 million in cash that we no longer need to maintain. So we have the ability to transfer that to the general fund to cover a portion of that deficit. So, you know, we're kind of halfway home, if you will. We're also assuming that council is going to levy the rollback rate. And we're, this scenario right here does not presently assume any utilization of fund balance in the general fund, and we're assuming flat revenues. We do have some excess fund balance in the general fund from the closeout of last year, and we'll talk about options for usage of that at the general fund workshop, as Matt indicated. Our non-departmental operating transfers, you know, all remain the same. Grants are not represented because we bring those on post-adoption. All special requests that have been approved are included. What special requests are things that are above the department's normal base operating budget. If they need a piece of equipment, or they want to reorganize their department or have a reclassification of some kind, that list is submitted to Matt and he kind of weeds through those. It does include our increase in pension costs. As the closed plan, we had an increase this year, so we're at the top of the corridor for next year. We are absorbing the increase in health insurance rates as well, and the employee bonuses have not been included yet. From the policy standpoint for council, the questions that we have is related to, you know, CIP funding. Did council want to entertain some type of parameters for funding our ongoing rolling stock? The fiscal policies that we sent, did you want to entertain adoption? You know, did you want us to pursue looking at the not-for-profit funding and the enterprise fund balance? The general deficit funding that we're looking at, we have many options, like Matt indicated earlier, of how we're going to close that gap. And council did ask for us to look at employee recognition. We've looked at both the percentage increase scenario as well as flat bonus amounts, similar to what we did in the current year. We are leaning towards the one-time bonus, and that would be for non-bargaining unit employees only. Because we are presently in negotiation with the three unions, we will negotiate any employee bonus or increases directly with those unions. So the one-time bonuses that we're looking at exclude the cabinet members and would be for non-bargaining unit employees. So we are happy to take council direction.
Let me also, if I may, while you think about your questions, invite Pete Lee to come up. Recall last, I think it was February, we had a work meeting cooperatively with the people that live in the historic residential district just to the east of us, where they brought forward some observations and some ideas for improvements in their historic area. Recall at that time, staff promised council that we would meet with them, that we would develop a list of priorities, and that we'd bring that back to you during the workshops. And so Pete Lee is simply going to talk to you about the communications that we have had with the group, some of the conversation points that have been taken away, and then share with you some of the priorities that were identified and how we will talk to you more about these when we have a work meeting to discuss our capital projects.
Good afternoon. At your direction, we put together a steering committee of 12 people, one OPAB member, several HOPS members, and a couple of residents and business owners from the historic district. We met May 29th. We gave an overview of the meeting or the workshop that we had with council and some of the ideas that we came away with. We had also, staff had preliminarily budgeted what those improvements would cost if we did the laundry list, and it was expensive. Between $7 and $9 million to make all of those improvements. And so obviously we had to talk about what were the priorities in that list and talk to them about how we may pay for some of those improvements. After going through the first meeting, it was kind of a takeaway was to go look through the district and see what you think the priorities are. And then they came back and we worked in groups and they prioritized what they thought the improvements that were most important to them that could be made. The three were sidewalks, decorative street lights, and improved entry features and signage and some banners. Those were the three top priorities that they saw as important to them. There's a lot of sidewalk missing and a lot of sidewalk broken within the district. It would be a relatively expensive fix to do it all, and so we're not going to be. It's about around $23 a linear foot to install new sidewalk. So when we have one more meeting, June 25th, and we'll go back to them with something that we've submitted for the budget that we think we can pay for. We think that there may be some other options for paying for some of these, and we wouldn't have to budget directly from a new source to be able to do that. Some of it may be able to be absorbed into some of the engineering budget, but so if we did 2,000 feet of sidewalk in a year in 1 year's work plan, it would be about $46,000 to do that number. The streetlights are, yeah.
How do you come up with $23 a foot?
Worked with engineering and got their estimate on what it would cost to install.
So that's no right-of-way acquisition?
No.
That's the cost of the concrete, just the cost of the labor?
Yeah, labor and material, yes, sir. Streetlights are about $5,900 a piece installed, and that's the decorative black streetlights with the acorn tops, the pedestrian scale light. So Electric did the whole district, and it would be it's 337 lights, and it's almost $2 million. And obviously, we can't bite that off in one chunk. To do that, if we did 10 lights, obviously about $59,000 to do those. If we did them strategically, one of the things that they thought was really important was they wanted to make the connection between the historic district and downtown. They wanted Fort King to, when you come up Fort King and you hit Wauhtula, that you have this sense of arrival into the historic district. And so they thought that if we made those ties with some kind of decorative lighting and some kind of entry feature, that would be one of their priorities to do. Wayfinding and new signage, one of the things that we thought was we may be able to partner with HOPS on some of the some entry features. We have wayfinding budget, and we don't have, I don't think, an exact historic district wayfinding sign, but I think that's something that Ty's working on, and it could be absorbed into the wayfinding budget. Other things that came up and ideas to pay for things would be to create a special taxing district. Of course, that would be a referendum vote, and the owners in the district would have to vote for it. There was some skepticism as to whether that would really happen, if anybody would vote for a new tax to pay for it. But it was an option. And the other is to create a kind of a pay-as-you-go partnership, whether it's with individuals on a street or it's with some other group like HOPS, where we identify the actual geography and places that it's most important to people or where they wanted to have improvements. And we partnered with them like we did on Fifth Street with the street lights. And they further wanted to explore also though creating partners for maintenance and maybe for some of the improvements with people like Hops and some of the garden clubs to do some things on the streets and sidewalks that would beautify and make sure to help maintain the district. So, you know, we can create new budget numbers for the district and trying to keep them realistic. And, you know, we wouldn't obviously put all of the lights and all of the sidewalks in a new budget item. But that's where we are at this point.
So we'll have, in summary, we'll have one more meeting with the group on the 25th of
25th.
June. 25th of June. We've identified their priorities, which, of course, new sidewalks in areas where they're currently not present, repairing old sidewalks, decorative street lights, and entryway features. Those seem to be the top priorities. So when we have our work meeting on the capital projects, what we'll do is bring forward to you some recommendations for perhaps sidewalks, perhaps street lights, not quite sure yet, but some recommendations that we can fit economically within the capital budget. And we'll have a conversation at greater length at that point in time. So we've had the conversation, we've got the priority. We'll engage you in a conversation on this issue during our capital project work meeting to find out what we can afford and what you want to do next year.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pete. Council members, any questions for Cindy?
I just want to ask a little bit about that not-for-profit you're talking about forming and what the thought process is behind it. And
Yes, the not-for-profit policy that I passed out to council is a one-page policy with an application. The thought process behind it is kind of from a global perspective, if you will. Council, to their credit, actually provides a lot of funding to the community in general.
Where is it? That?
It was in an attachment.
Yeah, I don't think I got the attachment.
That was sent to you guys via email. Let me see if I can get it on the screen.
Oh, I didn't print it out. Okay.
I have it on the screen for you there.
Okay, thank you. That's what you sent the other day,
yes,
via email, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Basically, when we stand back from a larger perspective, the council provides funding to private organizations, not just not-for-profit, on many different levels. We have an adopted community sponsorship program that's through the Recreation and Parks. That evolved over several years, where we used to provide cash as well as in-kind services, and that evolved over several years to now where we basically provide the in-kind service. So we're providing about $10,000 a year through that program. The council also funds private organizations that are in the community, like the CEP, the SVDC, the DBA, as well as many smaller entities through council's discretionary budget. We fund through the police and trust and agency fund. They receive some revenues to where statutorily they're required to give 15% of that revenue to the community. That amounts to about $15,000 a year. So in grand total, when we look at all of that, council spends, you know, about $330,000 or so a year. The majority of that money, council can see the direct return on investment. For example, the CEP, the SBDC, and the DBA. We know what we're getting for those community donations or those not-for-profit sponsorship opportunities. We can see, you know, the correlation there. In other instances, we don't have that same correlation. So if council will recall, last year we spent a large amount of time talking back and forth about $20,000, which turned out to be $26,000 for smaller entities who needed money. My concern is that we don't have a direct correlation or a way to demonstrate to the taxpayer why we're giving that money away. We don't have a funding agreement in place. We don't have deliverables. When we give the CEP money, we have a contract. They say they're going to do these things, and we're paying them for those things. So my objective was for council to determine, as part of the budgetary process, how much they wanted to spend in community support for these other types of things, not related to the CEP and those things. And to have a funding agreement so that those entities could demonstrate to us what it is the citizens of the city of Ocala are getting, that we're actually receiving that support within the city limits, not in the county, because these are city taxpayer dollars that are being used. Additionally, to ensure that these dollars are not basically just supporting the operation of that entity, keeping the doors open, so to speak. So that was my objective in kind of setting some parameters. And my goal was to prioritize that cap, if you will, if council decided, okay, we're going to spend, you know, $20,000 a year, our priority would be grant match, because that would be leveraging other dollars to our community to provide further services for our community. And then secondarily, you know, non-grant match or other requests, and have it to be on a first-come, first-served basis through the application process, in an effort to eliminate entities showing up at council and just asking for money and council continuing to reach back into the pot and trying to find more money. Because then it, you know, at a certain point, we're spending outside of our budget. And the application process for me was that ability for the company to tell us what it is they do, how they benefit us, to put together a funding agreement, and for us to pay them out quarterly instead of writing them a check on October 1 for the full dollar amount and saying thank you. And also for them to understand that funding in 1 year does not necessarily entitle you to funding in a subsequent year. Because I feel like a lot of the agencies have become dependent upon the city to fund their operations. So that was my attempt.
And the funding of this is going to come from the city budget or from people contributing to?
This comes from the city budget,
yeah.
Yes.
But I mean, will it allow dollars to come in from somebody? I know the county was trying to do this, and I'm not sure it'll work now, but some private citizen wants to donate something for HOPS or whatever. Would that be able to accept those funds?
Well, if they wanted to donate to HOPS, I would prefer that they donate directly to HOPS.
Okay.
Yes.
I mean, that's just an example. I mean, right. Maybe they had no real desire, but they wanted them.
Yeah, we really don't want to be in the business of accepting donations
that's
for
kind
others.
I'm really going that direction.
Yes.
You really don't want to be in that, but I just wasn't
right.
Sure, because I know the county had looked at something like that, and you've got the Community Foundation under the CEP and all that stuff. So
correct. So there are other avenues we can point them to. Now, if they want to donate to, you know, something specifically for a city project, we're happy
yes.
to take
yeah.
we're happy to take that money.
Yeah, I just wasn't sure what direction
yes.
we're going in.
And this was a follow-on from when Councilwoman Heinbuckle was here. She had requested that we develop an application process and some parameters around, you know, basically what is taking taxpayer dollars mm-hmm. and funding nonprofit organizations to where that nonprofit organization really should be garnering their funding from the public who support their cause. So it just, I mean, it's entirely up to council whether they have an appetite for us to, you know, press forward or
well,
not.
From my standpoint, I think we should press forward. I like the ideas of,
yeah.
you know, kind of knowing what that organization is doing and where the money's going.
Sure.
Are we going to publish this in the Star Banner? How are people
going
to know that they need to do this?
As part of our application process, it will go on our public website, and we can publish a notice that we'll be taking applications during the budget process. And so when we start our budget process in January, we'll make a public notification that all applications from nonprofit agencies are due to us by May 1st. And if then we will take those applications and bring them to council.
So when does this begin?
This would not necessarily be effective for this year. We would put it in place for October 1, so it would be really for the 16 funding process, but we just need to kind of get the policy in place if council so desires.
As a suggestion, that those organizations that have received funding in the past, just give them a courtesy call.
Yes, we would notify
procedural
all
change.
Of them. Yes, if we actually adopt the policy, they would be notified.
Council President, if there's no other questions, that's all staff has today for our first work meeting on the budgetary process.
Okay. Any more questions, Council? Okay. We're adjourned. Back in a few.
What's that?
That.
The attachment?
Yeah, I didn't remember seeing that. They sent me something on the